Okay, well, and this is class four, Where Does the Time Go? In Facing Uncertain Times, Practices for Calm, Kindness, and Compassion. So, yes, so this is in fact on the Four Immeasurable Attitudes and about directing our mind with them. To recap on what the Four Immeasurable Attitudes are, the first one that we started with is recognizing our bias to friend, enemy, stranger. That was equanimity. And our bias is how we is expressed probably most often about the whole thing of how we use labels. And that was where we considered the labels of, like, dislike, don't care. And then, in terms of specific relationships, it meant that we would label someone friend, enemy, or stranger. And the purpose with the considering equanimity is to try and reduce our biases so we're not going through this roller coaster ride that, and it's to create a greater calm for ourselves, which is what we want to do in reducing our biases and not. And behind the biases are the afflictions. So, with friend, the affliction of attachment, enemy, the affliction of anger or hatred, and with stranger, just the affliction of don't know, don't care, and the lack of knowledge. So, equanimity is the first attitude. Then we looked at loving kindness. And with loving kindness being the wish for all beings to have happiness and the causes of happiness, the key question there is around, well, what are the causes of genuine happiness? Because we looked at sensory pleasures and that we label happiness, but we looked at sensory pleasures don't last, they're impermanent, they change. And that's a source of suffering for us, not happiness, where genuine happiness comes from our own states of mind, our own mental attitudes. And obviously, attitudes like loving kindness is a very important one for our happiness. That's what we looked at in the second class. Then last week was compassion. And compassion is sort of like the other side of the coin with loving kindness, of understanding the and looked at it, may everyone have be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. So understanding them, the three types of suffering that are considered in Buddhism, and that was the suffering of suffering, which is the traditional view of what we think of in terms of suffering, the sickness and pain, and going through that. If we're looking at the topic of the facing uncertain time practices for calm, kindness, and compassion, we're doing that with the four immeasurable attitudes. So the first one being equanimity, and equanimity is about reducing our bias to friend, enemy, stranger. So if you think for yourselves, do you think in your life that you have the habit of labeling like that, don't like that, don't care about that? And that's then what we're talking about here. So we do that, oh, we friends we like with attachment, enemies we don't like with sort of aversion, or strangers who we don't care about because we don't know. So what we're trying to do here is if we stop the roller coaster ride of labeling all the time, our mind will become calmer. And that's one of the important things of equanimity. And in uncertain times, we want to have a calmer mind. Then the second one is loving kindness, and that's about knowing the causes of genuine happiness. We often think that the causes of happiness is, from chocolate cake to a beautiful sunset, the full sort of rosy moon a few nights ago. But like the moon, they don't last, do they? They're impermanent, they change, and we get cross about that. And that's because we think that sensory pleasures are the source of happiness, where it actually comes from our own mind, from positive states of mind, because ultimately that's what we can have control over. And that's important to understanding what loving kindness is about and happiness. Last week we did looked at compassion, and compassion is sort of like the other side of the coin to loving kindness. And compassion is about being free of suffering and our causes. And if we think of the three types of suffering that Buddhism looks at, the first one is about the suffering of suffering, and that's about, you know, from mental anguish to a broken leg to, you know, a cut finger and that sort of suffering that everyone would understand that's the sort of, you know, suffering there is. Then the second type of suffering is the suffering of change. So we go out there to see that beautiful moon, but then it's sort of we can't see it because the clouds come over or there's something goes on and we go, that's sort of, it can't change. A chocolate cake, my fifth piece of chocolate cake should be as enjoyable as my first one, but it actually is suffering. If you eat too much, it's the suffering of change is what it's called. And Buddhism says that in the human realm, our realm, it's the suffering of change that is our main suffering, that we just can't accept impermanence, that people change, that relationships change, that, you know, kind of terrible things happen between people, that it changes what we thought was our happiness and relationship to them. And that's the suffering of change. And then the all-pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction is sort of like, I like to think about it, it's the one where we are under the influence of, you know, karma and afflictions, and we, you know, it's the voice of the self-critic, you know, that we're never good enough, that we're sort of, oh, why did you do that, Carolyn? Oh, you said that again, you did that again. And it's that sort of like always under the influence of my habits that don't bring me happiness, that make others suffer and make me suffer. And that's what's called the third type of, you know, the suffering of all pervasive suffering and dissatisfaction. So does that sound like, you know, a bit of familiarity to you of what is suffering? And then today is joy. And so it's taking these attitudes into our practice with joy. And the obvious one, just following on from the internal critic, how often do we actually say, oh, I'm not good enough? Or someone says, oh, Carolyn, that was a great thing you did. Oh, it was nothing. You know, we play down what the positive actions we do. And that isn't a way to develop joy. We do need, with joy, to actually recognize our positive, you know, actions of how we think, what we then say, and what we then do. And we look, pay attention to ourselves, because then we can pay attention to actually all the goodness that there is in the world. And joy is the attitude we're going to look at tonight. And just for, you know, Dawn and Hayley, if you want some water or cushion or anything, you know, just feel, you know, feel free to do that. So the key message when looking at these attitudes is that happiness and suffering depend on our mind, that while external circumstances obviously will have an influence, and for some people, in the Sudan at the moment, or, you know, the Middle East, it's got a big influence on what they would see as their happiness and suffering. But it still is a way of interpreting in your own mind that is important. And in Buddhism, it's the only spiritual tradition where there is no creator God, no creator being. We actually create our own experiences and circumstances. So with Buddhism, we are shown what, you know, the path is. We are shown, like with this attitude, with this course here, that there are four immeasurable attitudes of equanimity, loving kindness, compassion, and joy are really important ones to achieve happiness for ourselves and for others. So we are shown the way, but who has to do the work? people, in some, kind of other traditions that, sort of some sort of other being will help you do the work. And while, sort of spiritual tradition and our teachers, and Buddhism, they're spiritual teachers who help to inspire us, that's for sure. Like the Dalai Lama is a huge inspiration about, yeah, I think that the path that the Dalai Lama is saying is probably a very good one. So, but we have to do the work ourselves. And that mind and mental factors, so the mind that we have, which is, all clear and knowing and awareness. And mental factors like the four immeasurable attitudes and kindness and compassion are everything if you're trying to do work on developing happiness and reducing suffering. And the great thing is that change can be achieved. And while I don't go into it in this class, have you, for the two new people in the Gompa here, just ask you, have you heard of the whole thing of neuroscience and how they, sort of the amazing thing there? Well, Buddhism and neuroscience have a very strong relationship. And I've shown the diagrams in previous weeks about how the areas of the brain that is mapped by neuroscience changes when the meditators are meditating on compassion and kindness. So they're the two ones in particular. So, and you've heard of neural pathways, and neural pathways actually change through meditation and familiarity with positive states of mind to produce, in areas in the brain light up, which are associated with positive attributes and affiliation. So doing the work ourselves, yes, but you can be confident that you can get change. And I can say from personal experience with presenting on the four immeasurable attitudes for sort of 13 years, change is absolutely possible. And where I was in terms of my sort of afflictions and sort of ups and downs 13 years ago to where I am today is really different. And if you sort of don't believe me, you can ask my husband. He says, absolutely. He said early on in the days, he said, you're just becoming easier to live with. You're not so bossy. So there you go, proof positive. And I love this quote because it's, I think it just captures it, where it says, where would I find enough leather to cover the entire surface of the earth? But with just the leather soles of my sandals, it's as if the whole earth were covered. Likewise, I am unable to restrain external phenomena. Isn't that true? But I shall restrain my own mind. What need is there to restrain anything else? That's got amazing sense in, hasn't it? It's a sort of one of my favorite quotes. And so, yes, when you go out with your leather-soled shoes, you don't feel all those bumps and rocks and stuff. Well, if you have the four immeasurable attitudes strongly in your mind, protecting your mind, that's sort of about you don't need much else. If you want to become enlightened quickly, you may need other techniques, but these are the four that, really are protect the mind. And what we're saying here is that what we need to do is to direct our mind with these attitudes rather than if you think about the mind, it can constantly get captured. Can't it? But, and so we're doing a little meditation just to give you the idea about the need to direct your mind because that's where the control comes, isn't it? If your mind is captured by all sorts of sort of nonsense and feelings and emotion, well, That's not directing it, isn't it? That's not, you don't have control. And so that's just what we're trying to get to with this meditation here. And we're not going to make it all complicated with, talking about the four immeasurables. But we're going to do simple one is we're directing our mind to the breath, and we're observing how much our mind can get captured by other stuff. Okay, so are you used to doing meditations, or that's okay. So one of the most important things, feet flat on the floor, which is why you may need, might be more comfortable with a cushion. And so I always use a cushion myself. So we need feet flat on the floor. And with the meditation position, and this is a good reminder to everybody, is to have a straight back. Because in the Buddhist tradition, yoga traditions, other traditions, it's the idea of energy channels, isn't it, in the body? And so one of the important energy channels is that basic one that goes up our back. So we try and keep that channel sort of nice and straight. And so we just be comfortable. Don't sort of maybe just sort of put all that, just do our shoulders back. Put them up and then, take them down and just try and get comfortable. It is the end of the day. So this is about directing the mind. So in a comfortable position, so you can rest your hands gently in your lap or wherever is comfortable for you, and take a few deep breaths. Coming in with sort of energy with the in-breath, cleansing breath, and then on the out breath, either let go through your mouth or through your nose and let go any tightness in the body, any clinging. And with your eyes, if you want to keep them slightly open, that's good, but the gaze sort of goes down the nose. Or if you have them shut, make sure they're only lightly shut so that drowsiness, you don't get the signal for drowsiness. And at any times you can open them fully and look around, that's fine. But first of all, bring your focus, bring your attention to the sensation of your breath. You can do that generally, or the breath at the nostrils, or in the belly, whatever suits you. But your object of focus is the breath. This is your anchor. Breathing in and breathing out. Directing your attention, directing your mind to your breath. So it comes into the body and leaves the body. Experiencing the pattern of your breath, either at the nostrils, the belly, or just generally feeling it come in and going out. Just breathing gently and naturally. And you may find thoughts arise, or your attention goes to sounds or sensations. Simply notice that they have captured your attention, and without judgment or without following them, direct your mind back to the breath. Just breathing and following the breath gently, coming into your body And leaving. Breathing in and out. And you may notice again that thoughts come into your mind. Think of the analogy of the sky, that your mind is like the sky with great awareness and clarity. And your thoughts are like clouds passing by across the sky. You are like the sky and not the clouds. Gently breathing in and out. Just noticing if any other thoughts or feelings or worry arises. Notice, but firmly direct your mind back to the breath. Just gently directing your attention. Not forcing it or anything, back to the breath for another minute or so. As we close the meditation, gently bring your awareness back to all of your body, to being in the room. And when you're ready, open your eyes. And as we do, we dedicate this short meditation to being able to direct our mind where we want it and not have it captured. To direct it with positive attitudes, like the four immeasurable attitudes. And I know it's only short, but did you get some idea or concept of this difference between you wanting to direct your mind and then the mind taking it, being captured by other thoughts and ideas and sounds? And some parts are better than others, hopefully, that's what we're trying to remember, that we want to direct the mind with the four immeasurable attitudes and not be captured by anger or attachment or just daydreaming or just all of that. So with the attitude of joy, the joy is, may all beings have happiness and be free from suffering. And what we do with the attitude of joy, we look to see, well, what are we paying attention to? Are we paying attention to the happiness in the world? And this is particularly in uncertain times. We are probably paying attention to what the media says, what social media feeds say and what comes through on all those sort of, channels that you may be involved in. And this is a chap, Alan Wallace, who was very early on promoting the importance of the four immeasurable attitudes. And there he is saying, if you're not taking delight in the good of the world, you're not paying attention. And that is the important message, from tonight, is what do we pay attention to, and how we need to pay attention to the goodness of the world, but also in a realistic way. And I don't know if you knew, a number of years ago, there was a movie came out, a documentary called Mission Joy, which was between the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu, the Archbishop of South Africa, wasn't he? I think he is. Who, and they just, it was called Mission Joy because the interaction between them was just so absolutely joyful, and what that was what they were talking about. And so this is around, directing the mind with the attitude of joy, which was just really exemplified in this movie and is really exemplified by, His Holiness and the late Desmond, Archbishop Desmond Tutu. And directing the mind with joy is a source of happiness, for us. And we pay attention to well-being, positive achievements, and the way we cultivate virtue. And what is so important is, who do we start with in paying attention to that? Who do we start with? Very good, spot on. We start by paying attention to what we do, because that's really important for how we develop happiness in our own mind and how we get rid of some of the causes of our suffering. And we cultivate a good heart with that sort of attention. And we try not to create causes for suffering to arise. Because if we are constantly not paying attention to all the good that we do and bring to the world, then we're not getting rid of causes of our own suffering, because we don't appreciate all the goodness that we do have in what we think, what we say, and what we do. So it's most important to direct the mind with the attitude of joy. In terms of how we pay attention with joy, we rejoice in how other people benefit and how people benefit others. So, like with Archbishop Desmond Tutu, with the Dalai Lama, are sort of examples way up there. But if you also think in your own life, this in ordinary day life, the sort of you must be able to bring to mind occasions of how people, even just letting you into the traffic, smiling as sort of, you go past. It's just simple things. Friends who said, "Hey, how are you going? Are you okay?" Or just small examples to big examples of rejoicing in how others benefit, how we benefit each other. But I'll say it again, appreciating your own actions with joy. Do you think that you're very good at that? Do you think that you really do appreciate your own goodness and the positive, your own positive actions? Sometimes, yes, but probably not enough. Is that what you'd say? That it's about, we don't pay enough attention, or as I said earlier, we say, "Oh, that was nothing." Is that something you say? "Oh, that was nothing, Well, no, it wasn't nothing. It someone pointed out to you or thanked you. So that is important to really be pay attention to. And the other role that joy has by paying attention to goodness. So while compassion is a really important attitude, and compassion in terms of neuroscience, true compassion of wanting people to be free of their suffering has lights up the positive areas of the brain. So compassion is a very positive, overall positive attitude. But because compassion does pay attention to suffering, sometimes we can get a little bit of compassion fatigue and just, it's sort of suffering, suffering. We want to sort of chill out a bit. And that's where the antidote, is, where the joy and compassion can be balanced up. And the other important thing of what joy is it's an antidote to jealousy and envy. Have you heard of the term antidotes? You've heard of the term, in terms of a snake bite and antivenom, haven't you? Well, I think it's a really good analogy in Buddhism, because what it's saying is that the afflictions are like poison in our system, in our mind. The afflictions, hatred, always disturbs and causes suffering in our mind. And just as with the snake venom, you can't take aspirin for, to and think that that's going to be snake venom, or you can't, for a brown snake, maybe take, a black belly, a red-bellied black snake, that there are specific antidotes for the different snakes, as I understand it. So an antidote is to say, well, just as with snake bites, our afflictions act as poison of a snake bite. They really, you could say that they bite us, but they bite us in the mind, and that's the more kind of long-term and hard one of where the afflictions bite. So afflictions act as poisons, and for ne every negative state, there is at least one that can counteract it. And what the other point from the previous slide that said that joy is a specific antidote for the afflictions of jealousy and envy, and I'll explain how that works. And an antidote is positive qualities, what the Dalai Lama calls virtues. They act as antidotes to afflictive states of mind. And the interesting thing with how our sort of mind and brain works, we actually can't hold an affliction and one of the antidotes in our mind at the same time. It might be, sort of short periods of, that sort of anger. No, I must do patience. Anger, patience, anger, patience. But you can't have anger and compassion, or anger and patience, in your mind at the same time. And so that is how you can build the antidote in its strength by saying, okay, I've got, patience or joy in my mind now, and I'm going to hold it there. I'm going to direct my mind to keeping the mental attitude of joy in my mind to try and overcome the affliction of envy and jealousy. Does that make sense, that analogy of how anger, hatred, attachment, envy does influence our mind, and how we need to work on it? And so I introduced the whole idea of antidotes with the attitude of joy, because I can say from my own personal experience that, joy really is the antidote to jealousy. So what happens if you're looking at other people's situation? You can, we observe the good fortune of others. And in, my cases, and you'll sort of be amused with this, Mark, that seeing people in, when I was in the government service, seeing people promoted to particular senior positions, thinking, why on earth did they get promoted? I could have done that job better. And so we compare our situations. So whether that's, oh, all the people that have these amazing houses and cars, and I wish I had that, and how come they have and I don't? How come these people got this job and I didn't? Sort of that kind of, does that sound familiar? Yes. And what arises? You compare, and it's sort of jealousy and envy. And jealousy and envy are the causes for what? suffering. They sure ain't the causes of happiness, are they? So that's where what you can do is rejoice for others with the mental state of joy. And certainly what I found with the, learning about joy being the antidote for jealousy and envy and when you compare, is because I couldn't understand, like I would think, oh no, bring loving kindness to mind, but it just didn't cut it. And it was only when I started to realize, oh, rejoicing, and started to try and work out, okay, and the examples mainly were about people who got, jobs over me. And I would think that, okay, righto, in the circumstances, someone thought you could do the job better, I have my view, and I'll just rejoice to you. And because of the nature of the jobs, it was, I hope you really do a good job because you're going to impact other people by doing that. And so it really did make a difference that it was rejoicing. Well, people who, had, more fortunate, situations of, the resources and their children were in really, great situations, that they were able to buy their children houses and, things like that. And in my situation, I haven't been able to do that. So, well, what do? You just rejoice for them. So really, happy for them that the, their karma, they've got sort of imprints on their mind stream that there's, because no result happens without causes. They put in causes. And even with Trump, with the huge billions of the Trump family, you say, well, gosh, isn't that interesting that the causes for having huge wealth in this life is, in fact, generosity, they say, in previous lives. So it's a complex situation. So I just say, well, may you all use your money and may you set up huge philanthropic organisations and, and that's, for generally people who have lots of money, and the Melinda and Bill Gates Foundation with sort of, I think, about $50 billion in the foundation, they're at least very good examples of that. And so how antidotes help is that afflictions create obstacles to our own happiness. That makes sense, doesn't it? And are the causes of suffering. That's just plain kind of what our experience and neuroscience will show. Antidotes then reduce our afflictions. And with the afflictions, if you think about it, in your body and mind, it creates a negative energy. Like being jealous, created a kind of very yucky negative energy in me that I wanted to shift and needed to shift for my own sake. So it really, for want of a better word, I think there is a negative energy about it. And applying antidotes also then create an energy for our own success, create causes for our own success. And what Lama Zopa, which is the, Lama Zopa is that Lama there and the laughing one on the on your right side. And he was very clear and he said, the great thing about rejoicing for others is you don't need anything. You just need to say, oh, wow, that's fantastic, Carolyn. That, I just really rejoice in, what you do, good on your job, may you benefit many others, etc. So rejoicing is just a very good and easy way of creating merit for yourself, is what Lama Zopa used to really, send that message home, and that it would make sense. And all the four immeasurable attitudes are antidotes. So, with attachment, that, we might think, oh, it's loving kindness, it's love. But with attachment, there's always a bit of a clinging, isn't there? There's always a bit of, you know, what's in it for me, my ego's involved. So genuine loving kindness, which is about really wanting the other person to have happiness, is an important antidote. And it may be that you don't quite get immediately straight to the genuine loving kindness, that you need to develop, you know, a step like just trying to detach a little bit and then really developing the loving kindness. Then with anger, and again, compassion is the antidote to anger, but again, I think it would be hard to get straight from being really angry to feeling compassion for that person. I think that's why I always put in patience first, the kind of a bit of, you know, just letting go of some of that negative energy of your anger, letting go of that for a bit, and then moving to a state of, you know, wishing that person to be free of suffering, wishing compassion. I don't think you can get straight to compassion. It needs a little staging. Does that make sense, do you think? Yes. Then with ignorance, you know, that's, you know, while it's not a specific immeasurable attitude, knowledge or wisdom, you need to develop knowledge of the four attitudes, don't you? So that's where, you know, if you're a bit ignorant or not knowing about the four immeasurable attitudes, then you need to develop the familiarity and the knowledge and wisdom. So that is an important one. So you can see that as ignorance of the four immeasurable attitudes to develop knowledge and wisdom about them. Then with the, you know, the bias, and that comes, as I said, with equanimity, your bias of like, dislike, don't care, then trying to develop and understand that going up and down all the time like a roller coaster of, you know, I like you, don't care about you, you need to make that a bit softer. And that's where equanimity comes in as the antidote to the biases that, you know, we express. And with jealousy, then straight to joy, just straight to joy and rejoicing. I can say that is sort of how you deal with that one, straight to joy and rejoicing. And so what we do is we have what's an analytical meditation. So with the first one, it was more, you know, a stabilizing meditation of going back to the breath, directing attention back to the breath. But with the analytical meditation, it's exactly that. So we take the attitude of joy and we analyze it a bit more, and that's how we develop familiarity or understanding of it. So that's what we'll be doing now. But is there any comments or questions anyone would like to make?
Hi. Carolyn, I think Hi. I might have brought this up last time I did the course, but I still am grappling with it. The issue of anger. What do you think about the concept of righteous anger, when it is appropriate to be angry? And in fact, anger can be a motivating force for change, or for someone to stand up,
yes,
counted on some matter or other. So I don't always want to be patient and compassionate when I'm feeling some sort of righteous anger.
I think the word, it's a good point, Mark, and I think the words of the Dalai Lama reframe it when he says we don't have idiot compassion. So he's going to the opposite and say, well, let's start with compassion, but we don't have idiot compassion, that if we see something, you know, someone about to do, you know, harm or do, you know, actively do negative actions, then we don't just allow them to do that. We don't, you know, we do try and intervene. So I think it's not focusing on the anger, but looking at, yes, we're trying to develop compassion, but as His Holiness has said, we don't have idiot compassion. We don't just allow anyone to, you know, do stuff to us, and we do write letters, we do take action, we do analyze a situation to see that people are not acting with compassion. And what we want everyone to do is understand that they're suffering by their actions, as well as the people that they're being negative towards are suffering. So it's kind of turning it that way, Marg, if that makes sense. So it's not idiot compassion. It's not saying that one is not outraged by the terrible oppression for ethnic groups across the whole world, virtually. It's not to say that what the Taliban are doing with women in Afghanistan isn't something that you wouldn't stand up against. And so, yes, it's all environmental activism. I think it was last week that I mentioned that, you know, there's one Buddhist teacher who works with people like Greenpeace and those who are going out to take action against injustice and that, but to sh ensure that for those people that your motivation is around wanting to benefit others, and that the way to do it is through activism of Greenpeace and, you know, stopping killing whales by trying to stop the boats that go out to kill them. So it's about, in your mind, that your motivation is wanting everyone to be free of suffering. It's not to, and that people don't know how to do that, and that there is a necessary times when people need to understand that their actions are just not acceptable. And it's a difference always between behaviors which you see need to stop, and trying to at least have compassion for the person. Okay, now we'll start the meditation, and if you want to just stand up, if anyone, you know, at home, you want to just stand up and move around a bit, get a bit of energy in the body, or have a drink. And so we'll do the meditation on rejoicing. And the meditation's about usually something like 20 4 minutes or something. And so we do begin by settling our body. We can sort of roll our shoulders around, and just sort of there, we carry so much tension in our shoulders. So just releasing that a bit, put the shoulders up and then just bring them down, and then settle your body. Close your eyes only gently, or keep them open. And again, it's sort of keeping the gaze down the nose. Breathing in and out for a bit, calming your mind and being present in this moment. And we have the motivation for this meditation to really connect with the positive energy of joy for our own actions, and paying attention to the positive actions of others. So joy is the intention that we and all beings are not separated from a happiness that is free of suffering. This means we want to create the causes for happiness with practices in this life, and if on the Buddhist path, for all future lives until enlightenment. So we start with a focus in this life on the practice of joy, by paying attention to our own kind, beneficial, positive actions. Begin by asking yourself, what do I pay attention to? Do I allow my self-critic far too much airtime? Do I give only passing attention to my positive actions, Do I focus more on my shortcomings? We all need to understand that it is skillful means and wisdom to pay attention to our own positive actions, creating causes for our happiness and reducing suffering. That we direct our mind with joy by starting to appreciate the precious human life we have. We have circumstances that support us. We haven't completed acts of great negativity, such as killing human lives. We have a life where we've made choices, such as being in this class this evening. So rejoice in having a precious human rebirth. And let some feeling or sensation of rejoicing arise. Try and find some warmth or energy, whatever works for you, around your heart area, with some awareness and sense of rejoicing in your precious human rebirth and in choices you're making. So I will make suggestions for you to consider and bring to mind an example that you feel good about, whether large or small, when you recall an action that you made. First, with generosity, which is the intention to give to others. So, times when you did reach out to others with acts of giving money or other resources, giving love and kindness in your words and deeds, sharing knowledge with others, giving time to a colleague, friend in distress. Recall an example of your generosity. Have it clear in your mind. And let rejoicing arise. And then think about ethics. This is the intention to act in beneficial ways, not harmful ways. Consider when you used your words or actions without discrimination. Were you called out negative behaviors with wisdom? Were you provided protection from abuse to others? Were you refrained from acts of physical or verbal anger? Helped settle disputes? Recall some examples for yourself. And let rejoicing arise. With patience, the intention to act without bias, Lashing out with words and deeds. When you mentally decided to let things go or just to walk away without regretting what you nearly said or did. When you allowed waves of emotional pain to just be, waited for things to pass, helped others with their patience, recall examples. And let rejoicing arise. And with these examples or other ones that may come to mind, consider how you applied antidotes, such as joy. When you reframed in your mind someone having more resources than you, having good fortune, getting new jobs, where you reframed and rejoiced for them, wished them well in your mind. Where you responded to situations by arising compassion and kindness. Let awareness of examples of antidotes come to your mind. And let rejoicing arise. And as this rejoicing arises, say to yourself, may I pay attention to actions to benefit others? May I experience joy? May my rejoicing bring happiness? May I pay attention to my actions to benefit others. May I experience joy. May my rejoicing bring happiness. Just breathing gently. Let rejoicing settle. Let the attitude of joy settle with a warmth or a light or an energy at your heart area. And with our attitude of joy, we can pay attention to the joy that other people's actions have brought to us. A family member, a friend, a teacher. Bring one person at least clearly to mind. Someone who gave words and deeds to benefit, support, encourage you. It is in dependence on the actions of others that we are supported too to flourish and grow. And say to yourself as you think of this person, or say to them, may you pay attention to your acts to benefit others. May you experience joy. May your rejoicing bring you happiness. And as you say these words again, send to them a sense of appreciation and gratitude, positive mental factors. When you say, may you pay attention to your acts to benefit others as they benefited me. May you experience joy. May your attitude of joy bring you happiness. And let your attitude of joy grow stronger as warmth, energy, and light around your heart. And remember that it is important to develop the strength of your attitude of joy as an antidote to jealousy. And have a go and bring to mind a person or a situation where some feelings of jealousy or envy arose. Probably nothing too strong. But ask yourself, where does this jealousy arise from? It arises from outside, from within our own mind. So directing our mind with an attitude of joy is an antidote to the afflictions in our mind of jealousy and envy. Rejoicing as an antidote creates merit for us to have the causes of happiness in our own mind. So thinking of a person or situation, we can open our heart with rejoicing and can wish for this person or people in the situation. May you rejoice in your good fortune. I rejoice in your good fortune. May my rejoicing bring happiness, not suffering. I rejoice in your good fortune and wish you rejoice in your good fortune. And may my rejoicing bring happiness, not suffering. So let this rejoicing as an antidote for jealousy and envy Settle in your heart. Attitude of joy, of rejoicing, as a warm energy and light, or a warmth that comes from your understanding of the power of joy as an antidote to jealousy and envy. And now we can give attention to other people or organizations. What people you like or organizations who you particularly identify as acting with kindness, philanthropy, non-violence, compassion. It could be people and organizations who take strong action, who do not act out of idiot compassion, as His Holiness would say, who act to change our world for the better in families or organizations, communities, to the world stage. With the inspiration and the hope of such people and organizations, wish for them as you send light and warmth and energy and appreciation. May we all pay attention to goodness in the world. May we rejoice in all our actions to benefit others. May rejoicing be the cause for our happiness and dispel suffering. May joy and happiness increase across all the worlds. May we all pay attention to the goodness there is in the world. May we all rejoice in our own actions to benefit others. May this rejoicing be the cause for our happiness and dispel suffering. May joy and happiness increase across all the worlds and places where sentient beings exist. And just as you have sent out all the light and energy of warmth of your rejoicing to others, it comes back to you. And feel it entering into every moment of your mind, every atom of your body, this light and energy and warmth of joy. Breathe softly and gently, but feel your attitude of joy strengthening and stabilizing. And for a moment, simply rest your awareness in the immeasurable attitude of joy. And then, in your own time, gently bring your attention back to the room. Open your eyes and dedicate your efforts that the positive energy of this meditation will bring the practice of rejoicing into your everyday life. As you become familiar with that attitude of joy and how to use it in your life by paying attention. So, are there any comments or questions at this stage? Or are you processing it all? Probably, I'd say. Yes. So, what we have here is that we can rejoice with the five forces, and the five forces are five factors that are very important in terms of how you sort of implement or think about implementing the four immeasurable attitudes. And the first one is intention. So to develop the intention to really direct your mind with goodness and virtue through being knowing the four immeasurable attitudes. So an intention is a mental factor, and it's what's called one of the ever-present mental factors in your mind. If you don't direct your mind with the intention of placing attention on an object, your mind will just do it for you through habit and that force of kind of just what you're familiar with. So familiarity becomes very important because the power of joy as an antidote to suffering is a very good way, is a very good thing to become familiar with. Or becoming familiar with what the attitude is all about, becoming familiar with what is the causes of suffering and importantly the causes of happiness. So familiarity and familiarity through meditation, and meditation just doesn't have to be anything too formal, but just saying to yourself around what the four immeasurable attitudes are. Meritorious deeds, so what I say and do in my own mental activity, that they be virtuous, and that's where the importance of being giving yourself the attention, paying attention to what your meritorious deeds are now, giving them proper attention and not letting the self-critic have too much say, if any. Then rejection of the causes of suffering in my own mind, and that's the sort of trying to work with reducing anger, attachment, and all of those negativities by applying the antidotes. An aspiration to rejoice in my efforts and aspire to continue. And then some practice tips for you. So to remember to pay attention with joy. So in the next week, that's one thing you can all do is to actually start paying attention to the positive actions that you do. Don't sort of just say, oh, that was nothing or something. Really pay attention. Okay, attention is a key word there. And if you, when you're paying attention, hopefully you'll also pay attention when the affliction started, when anger might be starting to arise. And what you're trying to do here is to be pay attention or be aware of a negative feeling starting to arise in your mind and think, what can I do about that? What's an antidote I can apply to that? Or just, you know, something simple like, just calm down, Carolyn, let it go, just sort of breathe. When in doubt, breathing is also a good antidote, just sort of allow the mind to relax and calm. Resolve to work for each day being one that's well lived. So that day by day, so even if you might sort of think, oh, well, it wasn't such a good day. Well, rejoice again, pay attention what was good, and to resolve that, you know, day by day is how you can live your life so that each day is a new day, as they say in the classics. and recite the four immeasurable attitudes to build your familiarity. So are there any so that comes to the end of the sort of formal presentation, but are there any comments or questions anyone would like to make or to ask? This is, I do the classes once every year. If we look at, so next week will be the team four immeasurables, and that's about understanding how the four attitudes work together. So an example that I did was around with joy is a balance to compassion. So it kind of keeps compassions back and reminding joy the balance between, yes, there's suffering, but there's pay attention to all the good things. And so I do it once a year, and there is available I have a resource book that looks like this. So it's sort of very dense, packed with a lot of information and references and things like that. So, but I try and make each week complete in itself. But so hopefully you found that this week that
Yes.
you could follow it. So next week then is all four together and looking at more detail about that and looking at a bit more detail about with our body, with our speech, and with our mental attitudes to note that. So we dedicate just very simply with the dedication of the four immeasurable attitudes, which is may all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be parted from the happiness that knows no suffering. And may all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias, attachment, and anger that holds some close and others distant. And we dedicate for ourselves to pay attention to our own goodness and the ways we do apply the four immeasurable attitudes in our life and commit to increasing that and aspiring to continue in that effort. In these uncertain times, to benefit ourselves and to benefit others. So, thank you. Okay, well, hopefully, see you all next week.